Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
OG.
Make some noise!
Inside Boxing Live 11 is here with guests Tom Loeffler, Dave Portnoy, and Roy Jones Jr. Loeffler broke down the fine points of the Triple G Canelo fight as well as the selection process on the judges. Portnoy was an interesting interview as we talked about his new rough and rowdy fight league, the state of boxing, and who in the media he would like to fight. And finally, rounding out the show, the legendary Roy Jones Jr. joined the program as we went over his illustrious career. Inside Boxing Live 11, let's go! What's up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of Inside Boxing Live, episode number 11. I'm your host, Dan Canobio, and we have a big one for you today. Our guests include Tom Loeffler. He'll be joining the program to talk about the Triple G Canelo, the deal that was made very pivotal in making this fight. Also, Dave Portnoy, El Prez, the founder of Barstool. He will talk to us about his acquisition of Rough and Rowdy. They have another show coming up Friday, February 16th from Morgantown. That's a very interesting interview. You don't want to miss that one. And rounding out the show is the legendary Roy Jones Jr. We all saw Roy fight his final fight of his career on the UFC Fight Pass last week. We'll talk to Roy about the fight. We'll talk about some of his career highlights and what's next for Roy Jones. But in addition to that, it's also fight week. We have a bunch of fights this weekend. It's a very busy weekend as the 2018 schedule is really starting to heat up. Saturday night on Showtime, we'll see Danny Garcia taking on Brandon Rios. Should be an interesting fight for Danny Garcia. He wants to get himself back into the welterweight picture. The World Boxing Super Series continues their hot streak, and this is a fight that a lot of people are looking forward to. George Groves taking on Chris Eubank Jr., super middleweight division, World Boxing Super Series semifinal. That one's going to be great, and what we saw of Gassiev and Dordikos, if it's anything like that, we're in for a real treat. And Friday night on ESPN, Ray Beltran fights for a title and also for his U.S. citizenship. That's over on ESPN. So we're planning a big show for you today. Tom Loeffler, Dave Portnoy, Roy Jones. We got Twitter hitters. We got In Case You Missed It. All that and more. But first, upcoming here, first guest of the show is going to be Tom Loeffler of K2 Promotions. All guests on Inside Boxing Live appear via the Jack Doyle's phone line, located just one block away from Penn Station and Madison Square Garden. Jack Doyle's is the perfect place to get a drink before or after the big fight or game. And with that, we'll bring in our first guest here on Inside Boxing Live. He's Tom Loeffler of K2 Promotions, 360 Promotions, the man behind Triple G, Gennady Golovkin. And on May 5th, we will get the mega fight that we all wanted. Triple G Canelo, the rematch. And Tom, you were pivotal in getting that fight done. It was a longer negotiations than we thought it would be. Take us through those negotiations, and was it as long and as arduous as it played out?
You know, first, it's great to be on the show. You know, we're excited about 2018. We got the Superfly show coming up February 24th at the Forum, and then, you know, as you mentioned, Cinco de Mayo with the rematch with Triple G and Canelo. You know, from a promotional standpoint, I would have really liked to have the fight done last year. We could have announced it, and I already made plans for tickets and, you know, everything that goes along with promoting the event. It did drag on at the end, you know, finalizing the last few details on both sides. But I think, you know, the fans are happy that it's actually happening. And Cinco de Mayo was always the date that was contemplated for it. So So we're excited for Cinco de Mayo this year.
Was there ever a time where, you know, this kind of dragged out where you thought maybe, you know, I got to think about getting Gennady a fight here? You know, as a guy that likes to stay active, was there ever a time where you thought maybe this fight would not get done for May 5th and you maybe had to go to plan B here?
We did have two other dates reserved with HBO, one in March, one in April. Also, we had arenas held on those dates. But the priority for our side was to complete the rematch, and I know for Canelo and Golden Boy, it was their priority as well. It's almost like both guys need each other at this point, because Canelo made his biggest payday by far by fighting Triple G, and the same with Triple G. So to put on this type of a mega fight, you need they need each other, and they need each other's fan base. They did the highest number for non-American pay-per-view with their last fight, and we set the record for the third highest gate in boxing history. So for those type of numbers to be generated, they need to fight each other.
Now, you talk about how this negotiations kind of dragged out a little bit, and towards the end you had to just go over some finer points, but there is one point on this deal that has not been finalized, and it's a question I'm sure you've been asked numerous times here, is where the fight's going to take place. It seems like the front runner for this fight is Las Vegas, because they seem to get all the big fights. But you've been said that the MSG, Madison Square Garden, is making a strong push. So is there any updates on where this fight could land?
The Garden is definitely making a big push. They have that date reserved for this potential fight. So I got to sit down with Golden Boy and just go over all the details of each offer. You know, it is hard to beat Vegas, especially on Cinco de Mayo weekend, for everything that they offer. It's really become, you know, pretty much a boxing holiday, you know, for the big fights on that weekend. At the same time, I think the Garden realizes, out of all the big fights that they've been interested in, since Triple G has fought there six times in the past, and he likes fighting in New York City and at the Garden, that this is one fight that they would have an opportunity to be in the discussion. And you know, it's always nice to mix up things, but it really will come down, you know, for the fighters, what the financial details will be on where the location is gonna wind up.
I mean, as a New Yorker, I'm really hoping it does play out at Madison Square Garden. I've seen Gennady fight there numerous times. It's his arena, and with that being said, do you really see deep down inside Canelo making the trip cross country to New York into a quote unquote Triple G's home arena?
Well, that's a whole different discussion. Whether Canelo will agree if the Garden comes up with a bigger offer, if Canelo will agree to go into New York or insist on going to Vegas, where he's had some favorable treatment by judges, not only in the last fight but in the Mayweather fight. You know, it's dealing with different commissions. There's different rules, different officials involved, and so there's a lot more involved than just the arena. So we'll have to cross that bridge when we get to it. Triple G has proven he'll fight anyone, anywhere. I think he's fought the most or sold out the most arenas of any active boxer right now, any active champion. I mean, he sold out to O2, he sold out to MSG, as you mentioned. He sold out the Forum in LA, he sold out T-Mobile in Vegas in his last fight. So for him, it's not as important where the fight takes place. Naturally, he'd like to satisfy his East Coast fans, but you know, whether Canelo is willing to do that, that's a different story.
All right, we're talking with Tom Laffler right now, K2 Promotions, 360 Promotions, joining us on the Jack Doyle's Party Line. And Tom, you brought up the judges, and it took about 4 minutes into the interview, and it's something I was going to plan on asking you, and I'm sure you're getting peppered with those types of questions here. But you know, I know that you have been around for a very long time in the boxing game. You go through all the judges beforehand, you pick them out, you approve of them. Adelaide Byrd, before this fight, didn't really have a lot of question marks. Wasn't someone that you thought would put out an egregious scorecard like we saw. And as well as Don Trella. What can you do here for the rematch? What more can you do from your side when it comes to the selection of judges?
You know, you hit it on the head. Both of the judges that you'd mentioned had been involved in fights that we promoted before, whether it's Klitschko fights, Triple G fights. And there was never any issues, or at least never an issue that we could say, you know, we're uncomfortable with their experience or professionalism. Unfortunately, I think in the last fight, it just seemed, you know, one judge went in one direction or was looking at a particular style and just kept going in that direction. It's not my place to try to explain what happened. I mean, we felt that, you know, Triple G won the fight. We agreed with Harold Letterman, who's seen, you know, numerous fights in his lifetime, and he had it scored 8-4. I didn't think it was, you know, that difficult to score with Triple G coming forward, landing the more punches and pressing the action. You know, it seemed that, you know, that's the way I would have scored the rounds when I was watching it live and when I watched it on the replay. You know, the commission will assign the judges. If there is a judge that stands out that, you know, there has been an issue with as far as judging in the past or anything of that nature, then either side can voice an objection. But you know, as I said in the past, I mean, this is the biggest fight of the year, so there's no reason why whichever commission it winds up at that can't get the three best judges in the world and you know, with the most experience, the most competent way of scoring. And then hopefully you know, we'll be focusing on the action in the ring and not what happens afterwards, yeah, with the decision.
I can just see you now, like in a back room in Vegas or New York. You got the old school interrogation lights on, and you're like, "Tell me what happened in 1997 when you." There's just so much like talk about the judges. I can just see you playing maybe the good cop, and then Triple G comes in as the bad cop, and he questions these judges.
It doesn't quite happen that way, but there is input from both sides. Like I said, if there's a particular official that's being contemplated, then you know, if depending on the experience that you've had with that individual, if there's a boxing reason why there's some questions, and certainly both sides have the right to voice a concern. But we feel wherever this fight winds up, we feel, especially in light of the controversy from the first fight, we feel there's going to be a microscope on the officials that are selected. You know, we thought Kenny Bayless, who was a referee, we thought he did a fine job. You know, Dave Moretti, who's from Nevada, he scored it 7-5 for Triple G, which we certainly can't argue with. So, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, usually when you have three judges and one has a wide score that doesn't seem to match what's happening in the ring, then the other two will offset it. You know, unfortunately, the judge that wasn't from Nevada, he had scored the 7th round, which, you know, was really one of Triple G's best rounds, yeah, for Canelo. So it was just a little, you know, for whatever reason, you know, I can't really explain it, but for whatever reason, it just seemed like the judging took over the event as opposed to what actually happened,
yeah,
in the ring.
Yeah, it's a shame because it was a great fight. If you can get past the judging, and hopefully we won't have to talk about judging on May 6th, because both fighters have been pretty they've been out there saying that they want to end this. They don't want to go to the judges. Canelo is talking more trash than I've seen in recent years. And of course, Gennady knows he comes into the ring to do one thing, and that's take his opponent out. Let's go back to the actual action in the ring from the first fight. And we've had a lot of chances to look back at this fight and kind of analyze it. We've watched it numerous times. Triple G, you know, didn't really cut off the ring like he used to. When he got Canelo on the ropes, didn't really make him pay, but he did land the cleaner, harder punches, like you said, outlanded him in 10 of the 12 rounds. As for Canelo, he was didn't let his hands go as much. What can we expect now from this rematch? And take us back to the first fight. What do you think your guy, Gennady, has to do different to get a clear victory?
Well, definitely both sides are going to make adjustments going 12 rounds. With each other, it's going to give Abel Sanchez an idea. Nobody expected Canelo to be as defensive as he was in the first fight. You know, as you said, you know, he's been a lot more aggressive in what he's saying about the second fight. He says he's going to knock out Triple G this time, which you know, we all know, if you're gonna go for a knockout, you have to actually stand and fight instead of going backwards against the ropes. You know, Canelo did fight in flurries. We just you know, again, just if Triple G is pressing the action, throwing more punches, you know, some people make the argument, well, Canelo threw more power shots, but you know, you can definitely argue that every time Gennady got hit, he kept coming forward. So I don't know how much power was on those shots, and you know, Gennady's jab is oftentimes just as hard or harder than someone else's power shot. So it's hard to score, you know, an uppercut or a right hand more than a jab from Triple G, where Triple G's knocked out guys with his jab many times in the past.
But whose idea was it for the Rock to announce this fight? Because that was just brilliant. He posted on his IG page, and it got people really jazzed up for the rematch.
Yeah, I got to you know, I got to give credit to our broadcast partner HBO. They have a great relationship with The Rock. You know, he's one of the stars on Ballers, and you know, the way it was now when they first pitched the idea to us, we loved it, both on our side and on the Golden Boy side. And the effect that you saw with him announcing this you know, major event made it even bigger because of the announcement. So we were happy with the way that all transpired. You know, the first fight we announced when Triple G came in the ring after the Chavez fight with Canelo, and I think this one took a lot of people by surprise as well. So we're excited about kicking off the promotion with that type of announcement.
So maybe for the third fight, you're going to have to get like Donald Trump or something. We saw Donald in the locker room of Gennady.
He's a boxing fan, and he came because he's based in New York, and Triple G fought in the Garden. Yeah. He came to a couple of Triple G fights in the past, and yeah, I don't know what it's going to take to top The Rock announcing it, but if there is a third fight, I'm sure we'll come up with something creative that you know, we'll make a big splash.
Do you think there's going to be a trilogy? I mean a lot of fans and people in the business see this playing out in three fights since it was so close, but I mean, I'm sure you would want it, but is that how you see this kind of playing out?
You know, I think it depends on how the second fight goes, because the first fight was ended in such controversy, and especially since it ended in a draw, whoever wins the second fight, I think you can make the argument that they need a third fight. And again, you know, both guys, seems like you know, you can make maybe go back to the Pacquiao Marquez fights. You know, it just these are the two biggest stars, not only in the middleweight division, but you know, really in the sport of boxing. So you know, if they're fighting each other, it becomes a much bigger event than if they're fighting somebody else. And so that's why, you know, when the financial revenue is there, then and they're both on the top 10 or top 5 in the pound for pound list. So it makes sense from both from a boxing perspective and from a financial perspective. So I could easily see a third fight happening, just depending on how the second fight plays out.
Well, sign me up for that. But you talk about the money that Triple G made for this fight, and Canelo as well, highest paydays for each guy. And
yes.
And you talk about that, and you kind of steered Triple G's career from the beginning. He's paid his dues. You know, he's fought guys in countries all over the world, like you illustrated. How do you see the rest of his career kind of playing out? He's a guy that's prided himself on fighting mandatories, you know, all the belts. We've seen all the slogans and campaigns that he's have come up with here. How do you see the rest of his career? Is he going to be taking these big money fights now in the stages of his career? Or after this, could you have to take on someone, a mandatory, to keep those belts?
I'll tell you, Dan, it's, you know, he's always wanted to unify, and he's one guy that was willing to overpay opponents. You know, I can go through all the opponents that he fought, and you know, sometime as a champion, we had to pay the opponent just as much as his purse in order to get them in the ring and give favorable conditions. I thought it'd be easy to unify all the titles because Gennady didn't care where he fought. And he didn't care really at that point, you know, how much he was making, because he just wanted to reach his goal of unifying the titles. We offered Frank Warren and Billy Joe Saunders to come to the UK. That was, I believe that was the fight September 2016. And you know, we couldn't get Saunders to agree to the fight. And you know, earlier than that, Sturm, you know, had the WBA title, and Gennady was a mandatory for over 2 years. You know, we wanted to unify with Sergio Martinez and, you know, some of the other champions at that point. And it just seemed, for one reason or another, when he was on his 23 knockout streak, nobody wanted to get in the ring with him. So.
I wonder why.
You know, there's a good reason. The one champion we did get to unify, David Lemieux, and we have a lot of respect for Lemieux and his camp, which was actually also a Golden Boy co-promotion that that we did. But you know, we saw what happened when he fought another champion, and I think I think the champions at the time, they realized what was going to happen. Now, you know, with Gennady being 35 years old, you know, it seems like Saunders is getting a lot more courageous from what he's tweeting or saying about Triple G. And, you know, hopefully if things go the right way and if he can win May 5th, then we'll see if it is possible to unify, or we'll see whatever the biggest fights are that are out there for him at that time.
If you guys do get the win, I mean, I thought you won the first fight, and you get this win, you guys are going to be in a very good spot. You know, either Canelo or BJ Saunders, and BJ is talking a different tune here. He came on Inside Boxing Live late last year, and he made it very clear. Gennady Golovkin is public enemy number one. But it's interesting that when he did have a fight, you did have brought him to the negotiating table. He wasn't as into that fight. But is that something that you want to see, or what does Gennady Golovkin think of BJ Saunders?
Yeah, look, we have respect for Saunders. You know, he is a champion. He had a great performance against Lemieux. It seems like he's going after Triple G opponents, because now he's fighting Martin Murray, who's also. We have a lot of respect for Murray, so we certainly can't fault him for that. But you know, it's very unusual when you have a fighter that's very popular here in the States and has multiple titles, for that fighter to go overseas just to get the last belt. And you never see that from, you know, some of the big stars that have been here in the States. And Gennady, again, he was driven by that, by wanting to unify all the titles and again, expanding his fan base into the UK. You know, we went down the list when Saunders wasn't able to make the deal. Then we went through Eubank Jr., which we thought would be a big fight. Eddie Hearn thought that would actually do bigger business than Saunders. And then Eubank Jr. couldn't get them, or Eddie couldn't get them to agree. And then we finally wind up fighting Kell Brook over there. And with that fight, his first fight over in London, it sold out in 11 minutes in the O2. So it just shows you the universal appeal that Gennady has, whether he's in Mexico. We took him to Azteca Stadium when the NFL was playing down there, and he had a huge reception from the fans. He was just over in Sochi, Russia, when Murat Gassiev fought over there, and had a tremendous reception over there. Wherever we take him, he has that universal appeal, and I think he's really bringing back the definition like Ali had when he fought all over the world. You know, it's a lot of fighters that only fight in one city or one country, you know, kind of lose perspective of, you know, what it means to be a world champion. A world champion doesn't mean only fighting in one city your entire career, and that's what Triple G appreciates and is able to give back to his fans.
I love it. He's the world champion. Not a lot of guys, you know, embody being the world champion like Gennady does, and it's a tip to you and your team there at K2. You've done a wonderful job promoting Triple G. But I do want to ask you about Chocolatito before we go. I saw some stories that you were going to see him back in May. Could we possibly see Chocolatito on the undercard of Triple G Canelo?
That's possible. I'm speaking with Mr. Honda of Taken Promotions, and he's coordinating with Carlos Blandon, Chocolatito's manager, to see if Chocolatito would be ready for that that time frame. If he is, I think Chocolatito is a tremendous addition to any show that he's on. You know, we were happy to have the combination of Chocolatito and Triple G for I think we did that maybe four or five times, and it was, you know, at that time they were considered the two best pound for pound fighters in the sport, and you know, it just was a lot of quality world-class boxing on those shows that the fans really appreciated and responded to. So if there's a way to work out a deal to have Chocolatito back on back on this show, then we would certainly welcome that, because, you know, just like I mentioned with the Superfly 2 show, February 24th coming up here at the Forum, you know, Chocolatito opened up the division for those lighter weight fighters for the flyweight division, super flyweight division. So he's really blazed a trail, you know, for the smaller divisions here, especially in the States.
Yeah, everyone loves a comeback. I mean, know that Chocolatito will have his eyes set on February 24th. For the Superfly 2 card, done a great job at that. He's done a great job with Triple G's promotions here, and think a great job at this interview as well. We might as well just keep praising you there, Tom. But thank you very much, and see you soon ringside. Thanks for coming on Inside Boxing Live.
All right, great. Thank you.
There he is, the great Tom Loeffler, one of the real gentlemen of the sport, and you know, very well regarded in the boxing community. He's a very straightforward guy, and he gives you the information you want. He's done a great job with Triple G's career, and you know, had some very interesting things to say about the fights here. The judging, of course, is something that's going to come up a lot in the lead up to this fight. And you know, what more can you do? I mean, the guy's been around for over 20 years, Tom Loeffler, and you know, they're very close with selecting these judges. It's not like they are handed a piece of paper. Here, you're a judge. Okay, fine. We don't do any background information on them. You know, they study these judges and they come up with it. And Adelaide Bird, Don Trella, didn't really have that checkered of a past to warrant them not to be on this card. So he's going to take a very closer look at the judges should this fight land in Vegas, which is most likely the case, or New York City in Madison Square Garden. But Tom also spoke about he's going to be speaking with Oscar De La Hoya and Golden Boy Promotions very soon to nail down a date or nail down a venue for this fight, most likely going to be in Las Vegas. But interesting stuff about Gennady is that he said that they had two other dates in April and May. I wonder who those are going to be against. He brought up Eubank Jr. He's obviously fighting in the World Boxing Super Series, so it wasn't going to be him. But, you know, one thing about K2 and Loeffler is that they get pretty creative when it comes to opponents for Triple G. But that's not something we have to worry about. What we do have to worry about is May 5th. The rematch is here. Brought to us by The Rock on his Instagram page, Triple G Canelo 2. We're going to be seeing that May 5th, Cinco de Mayo. So special thanks to Tom Loeffler for joining us here on Inside Boxing Live. Moving along here on Inside Boxing Live, a lot of news and notes in the world of boxing since the last time we spoke. It's very hard to keep track of everything that goes on. Twitter is a great tool for that. But we round everything up in a segment that we call In Case You Missed It. And our first bit of information here comes from the heavyweight division. Anthony Joshua, Joseph Parker, will be fighting on March 31st. And we found a home for this fight. It's going to be on Showtime, like we all thought it would be. But the deal that Eddie Hearn has here with Anthony Joshua and his broadcast partners is with Showtime. But HBO can also bid on these deals. And HBO put up a very generous offer of a reported $1.95 million to air this fight. Showtime essentially matched it. We don't know how much Showtime put up from that. It could have been a dollar more. It could have been a Price is Right scenario where Stephen Espinosa puts in one more dollar. But you know what? Showtime has the fight. Joshua Parker will be on March 31st, sometime around 5 o'clock. It's going to be airing live, no delay, just like they did for the Takam fight. So Joshua Parker has a home on Showtime. But moving forward here, in case you missed it, Bob Arum. He's talking with Team Linares for a fight for his man, Vasyl Lomachenko. I love this fight. I really hope it comes out here. They're talking about March 12th at Madison Square Garden, but the last I saw on Twitter was that maybe March 12th is not the date for this fight because Triple G Canelo will be May 12th. Triple G Canelo will be May 5th, and what HBO likes to do is they like to air the replay of the big fight, and they also like to put it with a live fight. So essentially, Golden Boy doesn't want to be going up against themselves because Lomachenko Linares will most likely be on ESPN, and then over on HBO, you're going to have the Triple G replay, which is going to do big business too. So maybe not May 12th for Linares versus Lomachenko, but they are talking here. And I think it needs to be pointed out that Bob Arum and Oscar De La Hoya, of course, do not like each other. We all know their history. But apparently, Arum is not dealing with De La Hoya directly on this negotiations. He's talking to Mr. Honda. And Mr. Honda is a co-promoter of Linares. But you know what? Who cares? Would it be nice if De La Hoya and and Aram got together and came up with a deal, yes, that would be nice. But as long as it gets done, the fight fans don't really care. But one thing that needs to be noted here is that Ray Beltran is a backup option should this fight fall through. And we all know how easy it is for Top Rank to match opponents from fighters in their own stable. So I would not be surprised if Ray Beltran gets the call, especially if he wins his upcoming fight coming up here in a few weeks. Moving along here, in case you missed it, Terrence Crawford, Jeff Horn, 90% done for April 14th at Madison Square Garden. This comes from the lips of Terrence Crawford. He was on, I think what fight it was, one of the Top Rank cards on ESPN, and he was interviewed ringside by Bernardo Osuna, and he said that, you know, it's 90% done. So it came right from the source, and that's what we like here at Inside Boxing Live. But this fight would be a pay-per-view. It would be ESPN's first foray into the pay-per-view fights with Top Rank. They've had a few pay-per-views in the past, but this is the first time we're going to see Top Rank kind of trot out a pay-per-view. And the reason that's going to be a pay-per-view is because Manny Pacquiao is rumored to be on the undercard, or whatever, however they figure out who's in a fight, who gets top billing, who gets the undercard status. Well, that's going to have to be something hashed out. So, you know, Pacquiao could be potentially fighting Mike Alvarado. I know a lot of fans are not in love with that at all. But, you know, as a New Yorker, I know this is a few, there are some New Yorkers that listen and watch this show. Would you be willing to see Pacquiao fight at Madison Square Garden against a lesser opponent in Alvarado, or would you rather see Pacquiao fight Lucas Matisse maybe at the StubHub Center? I mean, I think fans want the bigger fight. You know, I'm not going to be that selfish and say that I want to see Pacquiao fight Alvarado just because it would be at the Garden. I want to see Pacquiao in there with some stiff opponents, some better opponents as he gets older up in age here. But Crawford, Horn, 90% done. Also, Jeff, I'm sorry, also Crawford will be playing in the NBA Celebrity All-Star Game, Celebrity All-Star Weekend. He's playing on Team Lakers with Jerry Ferrara, Nick Cannon, Tracy McGrady. So it's nice to see Top Rank, ESPN coming together and hooking up Terrence Crawford. That's a great way to become a star in boxing. I don't understand why more fighters don't put themselves out there, cross promote, you know, go on talk shows, go on, you know, reality shows. So this is great to see Terrence Crawford. Apparently he can ball. I mean, we all know that he's ambidextrous, so he's going to be putting up some right hand layups and some lefty layups. So look for Terrence Crawford not only fighting in the ring against Jeff Horn in April, but also on the basketball court for the NBA Celebrity All-Star Game. And rounding out this week's, in case you missed it, Andre Ward just can't seem to go away, man. I mean, he's posting pictures of him on a scale. He's talking about maybe I'll come back, you know, just sending out these little subtle hints. But his trainer, of course, came out and said that Ward has been, you know, maybe hinting at a return, and it could be Tony Bellew. Tony Bellew is the heavyweight going up against David Haye in a match that got postponed, but they'll be fighting soon. And, you know, Andre Ward's trainer said that, you know what, maybe if the fight is right, if the money is right, Andre Ward will travel across to fight, you know, Tony Bellew. I mean, it doesn't make it, will Andre Ward be going up against some of the world beaters at 175? Should he come back? You know, the Bivals out there, the Sergey Kovalev, a third fight with him. Some of the other, the killers at 175, doubtful. He's going to pick and choose. That's what I think about Andre Ward. I do think he's going to come back at some point. He's going to pick and choose the right fight that makes the most money and the most sense, because he is a businessman. That's something that he's shown in his career. But Andre Ward's trainer says that he could potentially be back to fight Tony Bellew. And I actually sat next to Tony Bellew at Mayweather-McGregor. He was doing work for Sky Sports, I believe, as a commentator. And I asked him about Andre Ward, and he, you know, he said, look, Andre Ward's a great guy, gentleman, wonderful fighter, but I can beat him. He was very clear to me, and I wasn't holding the microphone to his face, that we're just two guys talking, you know, off the record. And he's like, I know I can beat him, and he was pretty confident, and that was back in August. So should Tony Bellew get past David Haye, maybe we see Andre Ward and Tony Bellew there sometime in 2018 or beyond. Well, that's it for In Case You Missed It. It's what we like to do here on Inside Boxing Live, get you up to date on all the crazy boxing news that goes on in this world. All guests at Inside Boxing Live appear via the Jack Doyle's phone line, located just one block away from Penn Station in Madison Square Garden. Jack Doyle's, the perfect place to get a drink before or after any big fight or game. And with that, we're going to bring in our next guest here on Inside Boxing Live. He's an online sensation. He's a horse owner. He's a pizza connoisseur. And now you can add boxing promoter to the long list of accomplishments for Dave Portnoy, El Prez, the founder of Barstool Sports. Dave, thanks for joining us, man.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so Rough and Rowdy, you acquired it last year. The first show was back in December, huge success, 30,000 pay-per-view buys in this current pay-per-view climate is it's a big success. What exactly is Rough and Rowdy for those boxing fans at home that listen to our show that don't know what it is?
Yeah, I mean, the easiest way to think about it would be it's like an old tough man competition, really. You know, it's just guys who want to fight. They're amateurs, no experience. They just get in the ring and kind of go at it.
Now, I know you have fighters with all shapes and sizes. I watched the last one. You got a guy fighting in jeans. You had a guy just blatantly eating punches. You have female fights. So it's a little bit of everything, all walks of life.
It's everything. And, you know, it's indicative of where the fights take place. The one we did before was in, remote West Virginia. The one that we're doing Friday is in Morgantown, the college town. So it'll probably be more college-y fighters, yeah, frat kids and things of that nature. But it takes on the local flavor of wherever we host the event.
Now, you're talking to a guy that went to West Virginia University. So,
oh, I didn't know that.
You didn't look up my bio, Dave?
No, I didn't. Sorry.
But Morgantown is, it's going to be electric. On a Friday night, the crowd is going to be insane. So I know you're anticipating that, but I know you do the pizza reviews. I have one recommendation for you. High Street, Casa di Amici.
That's the full name? That's one name that you just said to me?
Yes. The pizza place, it's on High Street. It's called Casa di Amici.
Casa di Amici. Gotcha.
Yeah, all the kids called Casa, if you want to try to fit in with the young guys. But
okay.
It wasn't, keep in mind, I haven't been there since 2010. So for all I know, it could be torn down. It could be a bar. It could be any, a lot of things. Morgantown's is a seedy place.
Well, I don't doubt that, but all right, I'll give it a whirl if it's there. We've been there before. We've done events at Bent Willie's, I think the name of the bar is.
Yes, wow. They actually have a pizza place inside Bent Willie's, but it's only open like during bar hours.
Gotcha.
And that's some good pizza as well. But the main event, though, in Rough and Rowdy, I know last event's main event was off the charts. You had Tex versus Hank. I mean, the buildup for that fight was on the levels of The Thrill in Manila in my eyes, but... But the main event you have for this one, you got Smitty versus Sean Latham. Sean Latham, of course, is a comedian, and he's with Pat McAfee's crew. Smitty is one of the bloggers. I think he's a Philly blogger. What's the backstory on the main event for this matchup?
You know, there's not as much natural animosity as there is building because of the fight, but there's not as much of the natural hatred as there was with Tex and Hank, who legitimately hated each other. But these guys both want to fight. So, you know, we made the match, and I think anytime somebody's getting ready to fight each other, the closer it gets to the actual fight night, they are starting to grate on each other and get on each other's nerves and things like that. But these are just two guys that were similar size. They're both kind of big boys who want to fight. So that's how the match was made.
Now, do you make these matches? I know you're the president of Barstool. Now you're a boxing promoter. So are you also the matchmaker?
I guess to a degree. Like, we made this main event. The other fights, though, all the undercards are made by Chris Smith, who was the original owner of Rough and Rowdy, who we went to business with.
Now, you also have these female fights, too. I saw something on Instagram. You had something look like a toothless woman. I wouldn't want to get into the ring with her, but she looks like she's going up against some, like, a ring girl. I mean, what's the story on that one?
Listen, everybody fights everybody. That's why I love Rough and Rowdy. That's why we bought Rough and Rowdy. That is a match of somebody I like. If I had to bet on this one, I would take the toothless girl. She seems like she's been in quite a few scraps and would fight men, women, animals, bears, whatever. So I don't like the ring girl's chances. But anybody who wants to fight, you can fight. And like I said, that's kind of – I am a fight fan. But the beauty of this and what I always caught my eye with Rough and Rowdy, these fights are like the most exciting, entertaining, funny fights I've ever seen because there's no defense. You know, you don't get the Floyd Mayweather ducking and bobbing. You get people who in the first minute you're either getting knocked out or you're out of breath and passing out. So it's action 24/7.
Yeah, if you guys were to hire CompuBox, there would be no defense. We'd have our hands full for that one.
Yeah, it's just, you just have to, I don't know how, like, with the punch you're throwing, obviously they go up, you'd have to have like 10 people on those stats, because they just, but then you could fire everybody by the end, because everyone's so tired, there's no punches being thrown.
That's true, my fingers would be hurting, but you actually call the fights too, right?
I do, yeah.
So what's your style?
It may be my actual natural calling.
I mean, I've heard some of your calls, they're pretty good. I've called a few fights in my day, but what's your style? You're more of a Jim Lampley type, or you're more of a Gushing Gus Johnson?
does Gus Johnson call fights?
He does boxing. Or he did boxing.
I didn't know that. I mean, I like Lampley. I would say, again, I don't know that you can compare my style to any of them, because the action is so different than all of them. And they generally don't, maybe not, you know, it's more like a fan man type atmosphere. There's just weird stuff going on all the time. I guess I love Lampley, so I guess I'll say him, but I don't think it's similar.
Yeah, Lampley's pretty good. Mayweather-McGregor, I was out there. I saw you. You had pretty good seats, Dave. You were seated right next to our ringside connection. Shout out to Peter Chernin. But did you get the juices flowing for you? I mean, obviously you didn't anticipate purchasing a fight promotion, but what did you make of the Mayweather-McGregor buildup? You're a guy that promotes. What did you think of all that?
I thought the buildup was great. The first press conference, great. And the one, maybe they did a little too many, kind of went off the rails a little bit towards the end. And, you know, the fight itself, I was a little underwhelmed with it, to be totally honest. I'm not quite sure why. I don't know if they outpriced normal fight fans. There was a lot of, like, the Irish outside the venue. I don't know how many actually made it inside. I thought the walk to the ring, which generally, you know, will give anybody goosebumps, I thought it was way too fast. And I don't know. I thought it was good, but I thought there was something lacking with the electricity in the ring. I don't know if it was too expensive. Mayweather maybe doesn't have that, you know, that fan base like a Mexican fighter or a nationality or a Puerto Rican fighter or something like that. And whatever reason, I didn't feel like the Irish people for Conor McGregor actually made it into the ring in full force. So I was actually a little disappointed with the actual electricity factor. I thought the fight was okay.
Right.
But the actual theatrics in the day of fight, I thought was a little disappointing.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. I felt the same exact way, because I was at Pacquiao Mayweather, and obviously that fight was horrible. But the electricity, the anticipation, like the night before, the MGM Grand Lobby was, you couldn't even move. So I'm with you on that the fact that, it, you know, something was missing that night. The fight, what do you think about the actual fight, though? There's people out there that say that, you know, Floyd Mayweather carried McGregor for those first three rounds. You know, watch the copy box. He only threw like five punches in the first round, Mayweather. What do you think about the actual fight itself?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, it was very
bizarre,
Mayweather-esque. He did exactly what he wanted to do and was never going to put himself in danger, and once he was comfortable with everything, he just kind of took him apart. I mean, that was not, that was an exhibition more than anything else, and a money grab for those guys, and I mean, I was entertained by it, but it was pretty much what I expected. People who said that, you know, McGregor had a chance or was surprised, I mean, I Mayweather did exactly what he wanted to do. I would say he carried him for the fight.
Now, I know you're a big fight fan. What are some of the fighters that you follow today, or what are some big fights on the calendar? 2018, 2017 was a phenomenal year for boxing. 2018 shaping up to be great with Canelo, Triple G, and all the fights that Showtime is putting on. Who are some of your favorite fighters growing up, and who do you admire today?
You know, I'm all over the map. I'll watch any big fight, and obviously the personalities are what make it. The Triple G fight, I was supposed to actually go to the one right after McGregor, didn't make it out there. He's always interesting. Unfortunately, you know, there isn't I think hurt boxing is you haven't had like a great heavyweight champion in forever, and everything's so disparaging. And even Mayweather, who reigned for so long, won't fight anybody at the top of his game. So, you know, I'll watch them as they come, but unfortunately right now there's nothing that I set my calendar to in boxing that gets my juices flowing, unfortunately, which kind of stinks. But I will watch any big fight. Like, I'll watch them all, but there's none that, you know, I right now, which I think is probably speaking to the problem with boxing. There's nothing that's like, yep, got to watch this. This fight's circled on my calendar months in advance. I just don't have that.
Well, there's Deontay Wilder from Alabama, heavyweight, and he's actually
he's fighting on Showtime in New York. So,
yeah, March 3rd against Luis Ortiz at the Barclays Center. I mean, that's going to be a really good one because both guys like have a ton of KOs, and that's the thing with the heavyweight division. You actually nailed it, where that's what gets people excited. And Deontay Wilder is a name. He's a U.S. fighter. He's been on the show before. He's a great interview. And then you got Anthony Joshua overseas in England, who is like knocking everyone out. He's like an Olympic medalist. So hopefully, you know, the heavyweight division blows up, because that's what, like, kind of the lifeline of boxing.
Yeah, you need that, or you need a great division. Like, you know, something's got to happen. But yeah, unfortunately, I think if you go ask the general public, like 95% of the people are going to have no idea who Wilder is. So that, unfortunately, is a little bit of the issue. That the main draw in all fight game is probably McGregor right now, and who knows what he's going to do.
Yeah, McGregor, yeah, he might get in the ring or the cage with Mayweather. Yeah. What do you think that's actually going to happen? I know they're going back and forth on social media. I find it a little bit annoying, the flirting that's going on with them. What do you think?
I think they're going to box again.
You don't think they're going to do the cage?
I mean, Floyd Mayweather won a fight Pacquiao when he was in his prime. I don't think he's going to suddenly say, yeah, I'm going to go get choked out in a cage.
So, I mean,
no, I would say there's a better chance that pigs fly than McGregor Mayweather actually gets MMA in the cage.
Well, it's crazy because I think that if Mayweather did, you know, lose his mind and actually step into a cage with McGregor, I think that the boxers stand up is so far superior than an MMA guy. If he lands like a nice overhand right that Mayweather has done his whole career with 4 ounce gloves, I think he can knock McGregor out cold. But it's the fact that McGregor could take him down and choke him out that would get, you know, hundreds of millions of people to tune in.
Yeah, it's the age old debate. I mean, I think just naturally that Mayweather is a superior athlete, faster, quicker, but it's a totally different sport. And I don't know that you can pick that up and go against a guy who's probably the best at it that quickly. So I'd love to see that. But again, we're talking about something that I think we both know is never going to happen.
I mean, never say never with boxing. But here's the thing. Commissioner for a day. This is a question I ask, quote unquote, non-boxing people that come on our show. We had Tracy Morgan on. I asked him, if you were commissioner for the day in boxing, what would you do? What would Dave Portnoy do if he was the commissioner of boxing?
I mean, what can you do? The problem is there's so many different there is a commissioner, but there's not, you know.
Right.
You have no power. Like the thing that UFC has done, and obviously McGregor is changing the game a little bit, but Dana White can force fights. So mm-hmm. You know, there's always the best guys fighting each other, and they're fighting each other, it feels like, every 10 seconds. So that changes it. In boxing, you know, it's this individual thing. There's so much more money in it, but we just never, for a long period of time, and I guess you could call it the Mayweather era, you never got the fight you wanted to see. So
yeah.
It's extremely frustrating as a fan when you can't get the guys that you know you need to see fight, and when you do get the same fight, they're way over the hill, so you're not getting the fight you want. So if I was commissioner, it's that. You got to force, and I don't know that you could do it in the dream world, you're forcing fights with guys in their prime.
Yeah, you're right. It's the age old thing in boxing where you want to consolidate all the divisions. There's too many titles. You know, the best don't fight the best. There's no unified, you know, commissioner, so to say, like a Dana White overlooking it. So agree there. But you're a guy that's you like a good grudge, and you
love a grudge.
You're a grudge guy, and you've had some pretty public beefs with a lot of media members out there. And when you purchased Rough and Rowdy, one of the first thoughts that I had was, this is going to be a great thing. But also, you know, is Portnoy going to get into the ring? And I would say, if you can pick one person that you've beefed with over the many years of Barstool's existence, and you laced them up, you got into the ring, who would it be?
Jeez. So am I trying to, like, am I doing this because I'm using my brain and want a competitive advantage, or am I fighting somebody that may knock me out?
Well, I mean, you got to have the confidence. But I mean,
well, I don't. I'm not a fighter. The promoters generally don't get in the ring. The promoters talk with their mouths, not their fists.
That's
so
true.
Yeah, the ring would not be my forte. I wouldn't mind fighting Bill Simmons. I feel like I could beat him up, though.
The boss, two Boston guys. Well, he's out in L.A. now, but two Boston guys going at it. I can see that.
Yeah.
Rough and Rowdy, like New England.
That would be a huge selling event, a wildly. If you see me in the ring, that means this purchase has gone sideways and we're done.
That's what I'm saying. So February 16th, Morgantown, Rough and Rowdy. How can fans purchase this fight?
So you go to roughandrowdybrawl.com. $9.99 the other day of the fight. And it'll be, I think it's $15.99 day of. And I am a fight guy. And it will be the most entertaining $10 or $15 you've ever spent. I can't tell you how many people watch it like, wow, that was something. I may not call it fight, but it's something. It's just, again, it's not a great knockout. There's some humor, there's comedy. So it's a little bit of what we do, a little bit of everything.
Could we possibly see Dave Portnoy entering the ranks as like a big time promoter? You got Bob Arum's getting up there in age. Don King, I saw Don King at the Barclays Center. He was waddling. He was like on life support. I mean, they could use some fresh blood in here. I mean, you're a guy with big aspirations. Did you one day get into the boxing game for like legitimately?
It's a bygone era. Like those. I don't know who the new young promoter. I don't know that there are even. I don't know any of them. But those were the glory days of boxing when you had those guys rolling around. Rock, what was the guy? Rock, who was Rick Bowe's guy? Rock, whatever.
Rock Newman, yeah.
Rock Newman. I mean, these characters straight out of Central Casting. So, yeah, I wouldn't mind doing that.
There you go. Dave Portnoy, thank you very much for joining Inside Boxing Live February 16th from Morgantown, West Virginia, my old stomping grounds, Rough and Rowdy. Best of luck with all that, and we'll hope to get you soon ringside.
All right, thanks.
There he is, Dave Portnoy, the online sensation, the pizza connoisseur. I wanted to talk pizza a little more, but, you know, we got a little sidetracked with boxing talk. But, I mean, I watched the first Rough and Rowdy, and, you know, it is what it is. If you can take it for what it is, and it's entertainment, you know, it's hillbillies, it's you got females, you got guys in jeans. It's a little bit of everything. And you throw with the wrinkle of the Barstool guys with the, you know, putting their unique touch on it, calling the fights, and the build-up. It's a lot of fun. It's only $10. $10 or $15. So it should be a good one. And I wouldn't mind seeing you know, more young people involved in the sport of boxing, whether it's on the amateur level, straight up to the top. So shout out to Dave Portnoy, everyone at Barstool Sports, for joining us here on Inside Boxing Live. When I log on to Twitter.com, I want to be entertained. And right now, there is no better Twitter than the boxing Twitter. From the fighters promoting themselves, talking about their daily activities, to the bloggers out there, to the super fans that are trolling, the boxing Twitter is always entertaining. So here on Inside Boxing Live, we round up all the week's best tweets for this week's Twitter hitters. Our first Twitter hitter comes from @SixHeads, Galaxy Slice, and this comes via Nick Frapka. He brought it to our attention. It's a mock Triple G Canelo negotiations here. These are the deal points, according to Galaxy Slice. Canelo can only wear 6-ounce gloves. Canelo can only wear the headgear. Golovkin is not allowed to jab. The fight has to take place in Vegas on Mexican Independence Day weekend. Hispanics get free tickets. If the fight is close, Canelo has to get it. Golovkin is not permitted to win more than 7 rounds in any scorecard. Adelaide Bird. If Golovkin wins, the rematch has to be in Mexico City. If Canelo wins, there is no rematch. And the final clause is that there's no rehydration clause. And, you know, I don't think that's going to be the case here. I don't think we just spoke with Tom Loeffler. Don't think he's going to be signing off on that one. But thank you to @SixHeads for this very funny tweet. Bring it to our attention. Moving on here, Twitter hitters comes from Oscar De La Hoya. Of course, the great legendary boxer here. He tweets @BobArum. Manny Pacquiao versus Lucas Matisse would be a barn burner. Hashtag fans first. Hashtag war. You know, Oscar De La Hoya really wants this fight. Manny Pacquiao rumored to be taking on... who's he rumored to be taking on, Nick? Pacquiao.
Matisse?
There it is. Yeah, no, that's who he's going to fight here. Pacquiao is rumored to be fighting Mike Alvarado. There we go. So, I don't know about this one, De La Hoya. I mean, everyone wants to see Pacquiao versus Matisse. And I do agree that would be a barn burner, but I think we're going to see Pacquiao in there with Alvarado. Going to keep it in the top rank thing. But, you know, I don't knock De La Hoya for trying. I mean, even if it's just a little tweet to just make believe he's doing the right thing, you know, you got to give him credit here. Moving forward here, Twitter hitters @RolledBoxing, great follow. As much complaining about no U.S. TV deal for the World Boxing Super Series. The stream is quality. Who cares? YouTube, Facebook. Probably has more reach than HBO Showtime. And I 100% agree here. I 100% agree with World Boxing. We saw from the last stream in the World Boxing Super Series for the last fight. It was outstanding for Garcia Vorticos. The stream was perfect. I mean, they had their issues with the stream, and they had their issues with getting these fights on network television, but he's right here. There was like multiple ways to watch this fight, whether it was Facebook, YouTube, or the website, and you can watch on your phone, you can watch on your laptop, you can, you know, put it into Chromecast and watch it on your big screen. You know, the boxing, the one thing with Showtime is they're starting to put stream fights on Facebook and put more of a digital stamp on it. HBO's a little bit behind there, but, you know, this is what boxing is going to. This is how fans across the country and the world are digesting sports now. Is kind of a la carte. So maybe World Boxing Super Series is onto something here, and they turned a negative into a positive. Here we go here on Twitter Hitters. It's the heavyweight champ, George Foreman. They left me outside, he tweets. On February 5th at 9:22 p.m., George Foreman was left outside. We have to track down one of the five Georges. George's sons, to figure out why they left his dad outside. Is he still out there? Is he just walking around grilling things? Is he walking into people's homes? I need to know more information on this, because apparently George Foreman has been left outside. But I think the reason for this, or the story behind this, was that he was on some type of reality show or some type of show, and he was live tweeting it. And he was left outside at some point on the show, and that's kind of clarifies it. But I kind of like the idea of George Foreman like just walking around his neighborhood, or I don't even think George Foreman lives in a neighborhood. He probably lives on a massive ranch in Texas. Probably doesn't even have neighbors. But someone bring George Foreman inside. Here we go. Here on Twitter Hitters. Here it's Adonis Stevenson. We round out our segment here with some fake news. How do you like this? Adonis Stevenson, the fake news has reached all the way to Canada. He tweets, I just want to mention, wow, look how he spells mention, by the way. I just want to mention that my fight location will not be happening at the Bell Center on May 19th. This is clearly fake news, and the location for my fight hasn't been announced or confirmed yet. Despite the fact that PBC, his promoter, all put out statements, tweets, everything, that the fight's taking place May 19th at the Bell Center versus Badu Jack. Nah, that's fake news to Adonis Stevenson. Hey, listen. Adonis Stevenson's finally facing someone with some talent here. He's finally facing a foe here. Just go along with it, Adonis. Just tell everyone that you're fighting at the Bell Center and get this all wrapped up. We know that he can't leave the country. He has to fight in Canada. So not only does he have to just fight lower opponents and never has to really take on any of these mandatories, but he also never has to leave his country. He's got a great. Who has it better than Adonis Stevenson right now? But there you go. There's all the Twitter hitters for this week. Of course, if you have something or if you see something on Twitter and you want to bring it to our attention, we can have it featured here at Inside Boxing Live. Tweet us at CompuBox. Use the hashtag Twitter hitters. All guests on Inside Boxing Live appear via the Jack Doyle's phone line, located just one block away from Penn Station in Madison Square Garden. Jack Doyle's, the perfect place to get a drink before or after any big fight or game. And with that, we're going to bring in one of the greatest boxers of all time. Just the second man to win world titles at middleweight and heavyweight, the most searched boxer of all time on YouTube. And just last week, he picked up the final win of his storied career. He's the legendary Roy Jones. Roy, how you doing, my man?
Doing a great day. How you doing?
Can't complain. Doing well here in New York City. Now, Roy, you fought on Thursday night. You wake up here Monday morning here as we tape this show. Has it finally like hit you now that maybe that your career has come to a close?
No, it hit me. It hit me Thursday. I mean, I knew what it was, and it's just what it is. You know?
What were your feelings when you were making that ring walk and you were the introductions and you made that final ring walk? What was going through your mind there when you fought in front of your hometown fans?
Same focus as normal. Got to win the fight. You know? You don't ever win. Worry about whether it's the first or the last. You just got to win. Because either one could turn to be your last. That's what people don't realize about boxing. Any fight could be your last, especially if you go in there unprepared. So you try to go in as prepared as you can, do what you can to win it, and walk out of there.
You looked great in victory. Take us through the fight a little bit. When did you know you could literally do whatever you wanted in there?
I knew right before I started.
Right before you even got in there, you knew, right?
Yeah, before I got in there, I knew I was going to do anything I want to do whenever I got ready.
Is this? Do you think now that this is it? If you get a call maybe from someone else, you get a nice offer, maybe overseas, or Dana White calls you once again, he wants you to fight on Fight Pass again, would you think about maybe coming back?
because of how good I looked in the end, I would always think about it, but that's about it.
Yeah, you done?
Think about it, yeah.
Now, looking back on your career, what do you consider your best win of your long career?
It'll be between James Toner, Montel Griffin II, and John Ruiz.
Okay, I want to talk to you about, we'll talk about the James Toney fight. 1994, James Toney at that time was considered maybe a pound-for-pound great, and you were, you made your name in the Olympics, and you were up and coming, but you wanted to make a name for yourself that night. You ended up getting the win. Take us through that James Toney fight.
Well, the biggest part of that fight was to be the man, you had to be the man. And he was definitely the man at that time. And that was my thing. I wanted to be the man. Therefore, I had to beat the man. To beat the man, I had to go up and wait to beat the man. So it's like I see a lot of fighters, it's like I don't have nothing against nobody. I understand people do things for their own reason. But like when Andre Ward was at 68 and Triple G was at 60, Triple G won a big fight. Well, why you didn't go ahead on and make that happen? You feel me? So, I mean, that's just a different breed of people, different breed of fighters in nowadays. So, that's just how I was. I felt like if you thought he was the best pound for pound, I don't care if I'm 20 pounds lighter than him, I'm going to see him.
Now, do you think that the fighters are starting to get away from that? Trying to beat
them. Yeah, they're getting away from that. They already want the pound for pound challenge, or they'll go take it. They worry about size. When you feel like you're the best, it don't matter about the size. You just go do it.
And you talk about the size. You went up to heavyweight. I know we're jumping around here. 2003, you fight John Ruiz, and you win the heavyweight title. You become just the second man ever to go from middleweight to heavyweight. You know, where did that first thought come in your mind that I want to move up to heavyweight? Was that always a goal of yours?
No, not at all. I never thought I'd even dream of being heavyweight. And one night I did have a dream of becoming heavyweight champ. So I said, you know what? Must be meant. So let me go see, can I do it? So I went to Atlanta, met with Evander Holyfield. He said, no, I have too much to lose and not enough to gain, so I don't really want to do it. I said, okay. But lo and behold, he loses to John Ruiz. John Ruiz says, by the way, I'll fight Roy Jones. I said, well, you will. He said, yeah. I said, cool, let's do it then. And that's how that happened.
Wow. So you were potentially going to face Evander Holyfield.
That's who I tried to fight first.
Wow. That would have been something. But then from there, you go back down to light heavyweight. You know, most fighters, they add on muscle, which you did to get to heavyweight, and you went back down to light heavy. Talk a little about that weight fluctuation, but you end up getting the win over Tarver.
Yeah, I got the win over him right away because I had no engine, no strength, but I still was a strong man. I had a will. I had something in my mind I wanted to do. And I never give up when I got something I want to do. So when I knew what I wanted to do, I was going to go out there and win that fight first because I had to do that to do what I wanted to do. And once I did that, that's probably pretty much when I should have probably stopped. And it took me a 2-year break.
Okay, yeah. I know we're bouncing around here, but it was a fight in 2001. I don't know if you remember this fight, or it wasn't like a crazy win for you. You had so many great wins, but for me it was pretty wild because it was in Tampa, Florida, 2001 against Derek Harmon at the Ice Palace. And the thing that was crazy about this fight, Roy, was I think it was like a perfect storm where it was like every baseball spring training was in town. You had Derek Jeter ringside, which for me as a Yankee fan being 13 years old at the time went berserk for that. You had Mariano Rivera in the crowd. You had Ray Lewis there. You had all these superstars there. You know, what was it like to be the fighter that kind of crossed over where, all these other athletes wanted to come watch you fight?
Was a gift and it was a blessing from God. The biggest thing, it was a gift and a blessing from God. It was something I revered a lot, and I thank God for it, and it was very beautiful to me.
Now, I'm 30 years old, and I grew up in the 90s, and obviously working with CompuBox with my father, I went to a lot of boxing matches in the 90s, which means I saw a lot of Roy Jones fights. And what made you, when I think of the 90s, I think of you, Roy, I think of you rapping into the ring, which every fighter does now. You were kind of the first guy to do that. You were the first boxer to sign with the Jordan brand. You know, you were the first guy to play basketball and box in the same day. I think you made $300 to play basketball, then 1.5 or 1.7 to box. I mean, talk a little bit about the progression that you had and what it was like to be a fighter in the 90s. And do you think you kind of like brought the celebrity side or the entertainer side to the sport of boxing?
Well, I raised the bar. You know, I made everybody enjoy the entertainment. I raised the bar so that everybody understand that they want to see somebody that can do other things. I played a basketball game before I boxed. I bought Method Man and Red Man, bought me to the ring once. Whitney Houston sung America the Beautiful. I mean, I did a lot of things in Radio City Music Hall, first person to take rap music in Radio City Music Hall and boxing. I did a lot of things that I was the first at, and that's what I really wanted to do in my career. I wanted to be a guy who set the bar and make a lot of things be first.
Now you take great pride in that, and you look at the fighters today, and a lot of these young fans today, they search you on YouTube, and how many people come up to you, and they want to talk about Y'all Must Have Forgot, or they want to talk about Can't Be Touched, before they want to talk about, you know, some of the most legendary nights of your career?
A whole lot of them do that, too, because that's what they know me from. A lot of them, that's the only thing they really know me from is from those things.
Did you ever think that, you know, Y'all Must Have Forgot or, you know, Can't Be Touched would have upwards of over 100 million views on YouTube?
Never had a clue. Never had a clue.
When you were recording Y'all Must Have Forgot, you know, what did you think? It was just going to be like just another rap song? Or you think it was
I thought it would be another rap song. Never thought it would last. Neither one would last this long.
I know. I just looked on YouTube and 138 million views.
Mm-hmm. Never thought in no way in the world I'd have a boxer to have a song with 138 million views.
That's why you're the best, Roy. And I want to bring up one thing here. 1995, you take on Vinny Pazienza. And in that fight, from a number standpoint, because we love the numbers here at CompuBox, the only title fight in which you're a fighter did not land a single punch. In a round.
That's right. That's right. But they tell you that Floyd Mayweather was the best defensive fighter ever. But look at you talking another Hall of Fame fighter that did not land a punch against another Hall of Fame fighter in a whole 3-minute round. But they'll tell you all these other fighters are the best defensive fighters. How can it be that I'm the first one to ever have a person not ever land a punch in a whole round? Another Hall of Fame career type fighter. Not just a farm, another Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hearing it in your voice, Roy. I mean, you're not talking like someone that's exactly done. You got the competitive juices are always going to be flowing for you. Is that right?
That's always.
This is how you're always going to be, right?
That's always.
All right, now then, you've been broadcasting with HBO and various other companies for a very long time, and you've become an outstanding broadcaster, one of the best in the game.
Thank you, my brother.
No problem. What have you learned from Jim Lampley as a broadcaster?
Just that he is the best at what he does. That's the main thing I've learned from him. He's the best at what he does. And he projects his voice with a beautiful tone. He always speaks in a way that people can understand him and understand the importance of what he's saying in his voice. So you learn a lot of things about his voice and a lot of things about his memory. He remembers things. Like he can look at something and he has a photographic memory.
And that's something that he's kind of like, does he like take you under his wing?
Yeah, he takes him under his wing because we help one another. We feed off one another. You know, he knows the technical part of it. I know the true boxing part of it. So it's like he knows how to bring it the best from a fan's point of view, and I know how to give it back to him the best from a professional's point of view at boxing. So we work well together. We compliment one another.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, I know that he's been following your career as you fought on here. Did you talk to Jim before the fight or after the fight?
Yeah, I talked to him. He sent me a beautiful message afterwards.
What did he tell you if you were on Shannon?
Just that he's glad I had a beautiful career and that he's great to be a part of it, and hope that our commentary career will go even further.
Oh, I would like that. But Triple G Canelo, May 5th, you'll be ringside calling the fight for HBO. How did you see the first one shaking out, and what do you think we can expect here in the rematch?
Well, I saw the first one was a good fight, very good fight, a fight that I thought either fighter could have won the decision because I thought Canelo boxed beautifully. I thought Triple G stalked and tried to box beautifully. Canelo made him change a lot of things, and that was very good. So I look forward to a beautiful fight in the second one, but I want to see who can make the better adjustments. That'll let me know who has the better team.
Yeah, you had Canelo in there. Yeah. Canelo had him up against the ropes, Triple G had him up against the ropes, didn't make him pay when he was up against the ropes. Do you expect Triple G to come out a little more aggressive here, knowing that he might have to get him out?
No, he didn't make him pay because he couldn't make him pay. Canelo has a superior defense. He couldn't make him pay. It ain't that he didn't make him pay. He couldn't make him pay because of Canelo's superior defense, and Canelo wasn't giving him no headshots, so he couldn't make him pay.
Joining us right now is the legendary Roy Jones on the Jack Doyle's party line here. Now, the heavyweight division. You were once the heavyweight champion of the world, and it's a division in boxing that's starting to heat up here, and it's headlined by Anthony Joshua, Deontay Wilder. What are your thoughts currently on the heavyweights?
I love the heavyweight division now. Deontay Wilder is definitely the top dog right now. Joshua probably a close second. The kid he's fighting, Parker. Parker is very good. Andrew Ruiz kid is very good. There are a lot of good heavyweights on the horizon right now. So I'm looking for the division to make a big splash within the next 2 to 5 years.
What makes you put Wilder over Joshua?
Just because of his punching power. And I saw Klitschko drop Wilder, drop Joshua with that straight right hand. Yeah. And to me, Wilder has a better straight right hand than Klitschko. So that's why he's been there the longest. So that's why he's the demand, he's the dominating dog right now, because he had his belt longer than Joshua or anybody else right now.
What would you say the environment for Joshua Klitschko was like? Would you compare it to anything else?
One of the best ever. One of the best heavyweight environments I've ever seen.
It was something, man. And then we've had Buffer on the show. He said it was the fight of the year. Would you say that was your fight of the year?
Yes, it was.
Now, Roy, I know you're spending your day here on Monday, and we want to get you on your way. But just looking back on your career, 29 years, over 75 fights, you know, is there anything that you felt like you could have accomplished more? Or just sum up your career of Roy Jones.
No, I did. I had a great career. I did what I wanted to do the way I wanted to do it. Even my last fight, I had a torn bicep 2 weeks before I fought, and I still went through my fight. So I'm not a guy that pulls out of fights easy. I'm the kind of person that I did whatever was necessary to be done. I never failed making a weight. I never failed doing anything that I was supposed to. I handled my career like a true professional, and I'm very proud of my career.
Roy, it was been amazing to watch you all these years. I grew up with you in the ring, and I continue to work with you here at HBO. It's been an honor. And first of all, congratulations on a wonderful career. I wish you the best of luck, whatever you do next, and we'll see you ringside soon.
Thank you, my brother. Good to talk to you.
All right, take care. All right. There it is, the legend, Roy Jones. Wow. Interesting stuff there. I mean, biggest takeaway from that interview was that he wasn't talking like a fighter that is done. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but he even said it himself that, you know, what we got here? Y'all must have forgot. Yeah, exactly. When we were talking with him, it didn't sound to me like he was a guy that was, he still has those competitive juices flowing, is what I should say. And it's only been 4 days since his last fight, so maybe a couple months from now, he'll have a different outlook. But he's a competitor. He's a competitor, and what a career, man! Just from making these rap songs and rapping himself into the ring. First fighter to do that. First fighter to record music at Radio City Hall and fight at Radio City Hall. First boxer to sign with the Jordan brand. You know, Roy Jones is the '90s. You know, he's boxing's fighter of the decade in the '90s. You can say Oscar De La Hoya, maybe. Maybe shades of Mike Tyson, maybe Evander Holyfield, but to me it was Roy. In from the big fights to what he did in the ring, the showboating and becoming a sensation on YouTube and everything about him, it was really a pleasure to watch Roy Jones do his thing, and hopefully we see more of him ringside as a broadcaster for HBO. The great Roy Jones Jr. joins us Inside Boxing Live. All right, that's a wrap on episode number 11 of Inside Boxing Live. A special thanks to all of our guests that appear via the Jack Doyle's phone line, Tom Loeffler, Dave Portnoy, Barstool Sports, and the legendary Roy Jones Jr. Catch us down the road on another episode of Inside Boxing Live. A special thanks to our producer, Nick Canobio, our executive producer, Bob Canobio. Be sure to download all these podcasts on iTunes, Google, anywhere, the OG Podcast Network, anywhere you get your podcast, you can enjoy Inside Boxing Live. We'll see you next time, folks.